Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Morning enthusiasts, today I have the honor of introducing a very special man, Sean Walshef. Sean is the owner of At Cali Comfort Barbecue, founded in 2008 with only 18 employees, generating over $400,000 in revenue in the first year. Now, today, 2019, At Cali Comfort Barbecue has 67 employees with projected revenue of over $3 million. Sean has catered for the San Diego Chargers, now the LA Chargers. I'm sure he's not very thrilled about that. Yes. Today we will discuss, well, you've been an entrepreneur for over 10 years. And so we will talk about entrepreneurship. We will talk about how to turn your business into a media company. We will talk about digital marketing, how to hack brand awareness through social media, community outreach, and charity events. And of course, we'll talk about restaurant and anything else that happens. I mean, we just had a 10 minutes of just off the cuff conversation.
Absolutely. Well, it's a pleasure to be on your podcast.
How the kids?
The kids are amazing. They are truly a blessing. It's chaos with all kinds of love. I mean, every single day, you don't think that could be better than the day before, but somehow it is.
You find love and it gets deeper and deeper, and you just it's unconditional.
It's unbelievable. You worry that you're going to be a good parent, and you realize that, you know, it's kind of all the things that your parents and grandparents taught you. You somehow start to understand the deeper meaning of what they were actually trying to teach you in the big picture.
Yeah, it's fascinating how it's innate. It just comes out, right? You freak out, especially with having your first, and then it kicks into gear. Like, you are naturally a parent. You know what to do. You know how to protect and serve this little human.
Correct.
Now, I know you didn't meet your dad until you were 36. Were you afraid that, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to do this?
So actually, I still have not met my dad. So once my son was born, I started getting more curious as to the stories that my mom had told me she had me when she was in nursing school in Colorado. And, you know, she was 22 years old. And at the time, my grandfather, her father, you know, once he found out, which, you know, he wanted to help her. And he, you know, convinced her to come move back to San Diego. And at that time, from what my mother said, you know, my father needed to continue studying his education and he couldn't come back to San Diego. But they just lost contact. So really, I was raised by my grandfather and I'd only seen two pictures of my father throughout my whole life. And when my son was born, every single second that I was with him, I just couldn't understand how it would be possible to not want to be in your son's life.
Right.
And not only that, but eventually I knew that my son would ask me who my father was. And I didn't have anything outside of, you know, a couple answers that my mother had given me. And mm-hmm. You know, my mother's an amazing woman. And just by taking the time to really, you know, research, kind of going on the internet and putting together a string of facts. I mean, I didn't even do a DNA test or anything like that. But I was able to find him, send him an email, and his wife emailed me back, basically just saying that, you know, thank you for reaching out, but we're private people. I think she was a little bit shocked to find out that that he had a son. Yeah. So, you know, for me, I was happy to get an answer, so to speak, and knowing that I lived such a privileged life. My grandfather's an immigrant in Bulgaria, and he became a medical doctor and moved our family to La Jolla, California. And he put me through private education. And if things had changed differently, I wouldn't be where I am today. So it was a fascinating thing for me to go and just kind of trying to find out you know, where half of my bloodline came from.
Yeah, knowing knowing your history, it helps you know where you're going, especially when you're trying to be a better father. You're trying not to repeat history.
Correct.
We got deep. We didn't even start. Just so excited to be here. And I read your story and I read your bio. It is pretty phenomenal. And so if you don't have questions for me, I will go ahead and get going.
My question is, why did you start a podcast?
I stopped podcasting because I have this innate need to help others. And it's with my words. It's with what I've learned over the past 20, 30 years. But I couldn't find a platform to do it. And so for years, I stifled this dream, this desire, this innate need to help others and focus on trying to make money. And then realize money was not making me happy. I would start a new job, get excited. 6 months later, I'm like, I'm back to square one. I'm trying to find myself. I'm trying to find my purpose, but it's always been in there. Didn't know how to step into it. And so I started coaching. I thought about writing a book because I want to be able to encourage others, help others live a best life. And that's why the morning routine came in, because I believe in it 100% that if you do these little things, these habits on a daily basis, it will transform your life. You will be healthier. You will heal. You will take ownership of your life and you will change for the better.
100%.
This is the one thing that I had. I was like, how do I help people change and transform their lives the fastest way? Oh, habits. Habits that they do on a daily basis. Even with coaching, I don't know if I want to go into coaching. I just love doing this.
Well, this is a form of coaching, you know, through the words of other guests that you have on and your own words, people are able to hear something that might inspire them to change a habit that could change their life.
Yeah.
That's the beautiful thing about the internet and the world that we live in, is that you can share these ideas so easily if you have access to the internet.
And people are listening. So when this platform came to me, it hit me like a brick and I was like, yes, that's it. And I got on the mic and the people I'm meeting, like yourself, it's amazing. Like 2 months ago, I didn't have this network that I now have.
Yeah, it's incredible when you put yourself out there. And I know from having done 100 podcasts of my own with my co-host for the last 2 years, you know, I didn't go to school for broadcasting. And certainly it's been a phenomenal journey. It's just like you said, we would have never met the people that mm-hmm. we met. You're never able to have that kind of conversation. And it just gives you deeper meaning in life.
Yeah, and we're connecting people. We're connecting and providing a service. You know, we're sharing knowledge and it's free. We're doing this out of the kindness of our hearts. And I really love it. I stay up sometimes 24 hours editing episodes and it's nothing. And I wake up an hour later, I have to go to work because I have a 9-to-5 right now. And it's okay. Somehow there's this like charge, just this energy that comes out of nowhere that you can like lose sleep for 24 hours and still function.
100%. I mean, it's, you know, you and I, we exchanged emails and I shared an article that I had read on LinkedIn about Kobe Bryant, his SB speech that he gave about 4 a.m. And, you know, it's doing the things that other people are unwilling to do, but you do them not exactly, as you said, to make money. You do them because it just drives you and it's all you think about. It's what you think about when you go to bed. It's what you think about when you're at lunch. It's what you think about when you're driving, those big ideas. And that's the cool thing about podcasting is it's sharing of ideas. And those ideas, that's essentially curiosity. That curiosity, if it leads to action, it could change a person in a way that might never have happened. It's the same way. It's the same way when you read a book and you're called to, you know, inspired to read another book and to do something different, to make your life better, to help impact other people.
Absolutely. Sean, I was here yesterday brushing my teeth and I thought to myself, I've interviewed over 20 people in the past month and a half and not one of them asked me that question. Not one of them asked me about me. Not one of them asked me about what my morning routine is. Not one of them asked me why I'm podcasting. And sure enough, this morning, your first question to me is, why are you podcasting?
I've always been a person that goes against the grain.
And it totally made my day because it goes to show you attract what you think about. You become what you think about. Things are, the thoughts are things, because I just posed the question. I just put it out there to the universe. Like not one person.
Yeah. And that's that is 100% the way life is. The more that you think about things, the universe unveils itself in ways. And I mean, those are the goosebump moments where you know you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, no matter how hard it is.
Yeah, absolutely. It does give me chill. It just like makes me feel like I'm grounded. I'm connected to all things. It's a strange feeling. And if anyone hasn't been there, I cannot explain it.
I think people have been there. It's, that's the beautiful thing about life is, you know, the things that inspire us and that move us, whether it's through music, whether it's through something we watch, whether it's through, you know, the love of your children, the love of your wife. It's, you know, there's something bigger and better. And once you're attracted to things like that, you try to find more of that. You know, it's how do I surround myself with people and ideas that inspire me to be a better person and to live the life that I want to live, even though it might be unconventional, because even though podcasting's been around for, you know, over 12 years, actually probably longer than that, people are still getting new to podcasting. That's the beautiful thing about it, is that you always have to be curious.
Continuous learning and reading. And I'm a big fan of it. And I'm very excited to surround myself with such elite people now and to such caliber of individuals, because I am learning from them. Half the time I go through the interviews, I don't remember my questions because I'm too busy listening.
Yeah, no, and the access to people that inspire you and the people that are within your field or thought leaders that, you know, that are going to make you improve your business or improve your personal health or your life, or have a deeper relationship, that they're accessible. I mean, you can find them on YouTube, you can find them on podcasts. And I mean, the fact that I don't have to pay for a university education and I can have, you know, someone like Tim Ferriss, who has one of the most successful podcasts, wrote the 4-Hour Work Week. I can have Gary Vaynerchuk, who's all over social media, talking about the world that we live in. I mean, these people inspire me, and I can listen to them as if they're my mentor, they're my professor, and I can consume their content, and I'm not paying anything. And should I choose to interact, which very few people do, you never know where that opportunity could take you. That's a beautiful thing that the internet creates, is, you know, people are accessible. You can send them a tweet, and what if they respond? Mm-hmm. You know, what if you have, a request, and what if they say yes? Then what? Now you got to go and actually interview somebody that, you've listened to for however long you've listened to, or you've read all their books. And now this is your opportunity to, you know, sit one-on-one with somebody, but not just sit one-on-one, but share that with whoever else is listening to your podcast.
Yeah. I have currently reading Tools of Titan by Tim Ferriss right now, talking about tactics and routines of billionaires.
Yep. And that's one of the things I love about Tim, is he breaks it down in a way that most people don't take the time to do. I mean, if you just look at his podcast show notes and how detailed he is and being a resource for people, I mean, that's why he's as successful as he is.
Oh, yeah. He sets the bar real high. And I'm thrilled and honored to actually be in the same space.
100%.
Oh, John, share with us, what are some of the challenges you faced growing from 18 employees to in 2008 to 67 employees 10 years later?
So when you're opening up a business, and especially, you know, a restaurant business in particular, the common business mantra is make sure to choose for location, location, location. And a lot of opening a business is timing as well. I didn't do either one of those things. I opened a restaurant in 2008, which was the peak of the recession, primarily because it was just an opportunity to do something that I was curious about, was really turning a restaurant into a sports entertainment destination. But the location that we chose was, there's a term called off the beaten path, and that's probably the best way to describe where we're located in San Diego County. We're about 15 miles east of downtown San Diego, Gaslamp, where currently the Comic-Con convention's going on. But if you came out to where we were, you wouldn't expect our restaurant to be there. And for us, being unconventional has kind of been our competitive advantage. Opening a restaurant is not easy, and we've faced every single challenge you could possibly think of, from figuring out how to finance equipment purchases, figuring out how to settle lawsuits, figuring out how to pay for insurance, setting up systems, figuring out how to make quality food, figuring out how to differentiate ourselves by becoming a barbecue restaurant. It has been the most rewarding and challenging thing that I've ever done. And, you know, we're grateful that 11 years later, we're still not only in business, but hopefully creating a new business model for other restaurants to help them in the digital world that we're living in. I mean, because of where we were located, we were forced to do things as the internet became what it is today. I mean, in 2007, the first iPhone came out. So if you think about how far we've come from there in just 12 years with how much we can do on our phone. We used every single social media platform that was available to us to try to figure out how to get people to come into our restaurant so that we could pay our payroll. We could pay for our food costs and we could continue to do the thing that we love to do.
And so social media was very helpful at that time.
Social media was very helpful. And, you know, I don't have a background in IT or anything like that. I went to school to study business. And the more business classes I took, I wasn't compelled to want to learn more. It just didn't feel like that was the business that they were teaching me in business school. It wasn't clicking. And I started taking sociology classes. And that was something that I was just completely fascinated with. So I graduated with a degree in sociology. Obviously, that had nothing to do with running restaurants. I thought I was going to go to law school, was rejected from all three law schools in San Diego, which
probably was a blessing.
It was a blessing, absolutely a blessing. And I still have the rejection letters framed on my desk. Because that's just the kind of person that I am. But it was those setbacks led to us being in an opportunity to understand that, hey, in 2008, 2009, actually, my business partner, who was one of my closest friends from college, I made fun of him for having a Facebook account. You know, I thought he was just on Facebook to try to meet girls. And when I started doing more research and finding out, oh, you could have a Facebook business page for your restaurant and let people know about specials or new menu items, things going on in the community, I started learning how to use Facebook, and then that turned into learning how to use Twitter, and that turned into how do you set up a Yelp page? How do you set up a Google business page? How do you make sure that everything that's on the internet regarding restaurants, regarding sports bars, regarding barbecue, how do you optimize that so that people can find you?
And you took it to a whole different level. You got into Twitter, you got into all other social media outlets to actually get local press coverage and also to, you know, share the menu, kind of get people in the door. So tell us how have you utilized social media to actually get local press coverage?
I think one of the biggest hurdles for people is that they see social media as a way to kind of self-promotion. Oh, you know, if I'm going to have a restaurant, the food writer in San Diego should learn about my restaurant, should be able to come, you know, and eat at my restaurant. The newspaper should come and cover my restaurant. And the fact of the matter is that might happen, but the chances are very slim. And if you don't learn how to promote yourself, and if you don't learn how to figure out ways for people to keep you top of mind, then it's going to be very hard to stay in business because there's so many different choices that people can make. And technology is changing the way that we purchase things. I mean, it's easier Yes. for my wife and I to order batteries for my son's toy on Amazon Prime and have them delivered to our house than it is for me to stop on my way home at a convenience store and buy those batteries. And that's a reality of the world that we're living in. I mean, Amazon's purchased Whole Foods. If you walk into Amazon, mm-hmm. they're changing the game, not just them, but there's delivery apps. There's things that are threats to our traditional business model, which is restaurants and bars. So we have to find ways to adapt.
You don't have to go out to dinner anymore. Dinner will come to you. Have dinner in.
100%. And for us, we need to find out ways to continue to be relevant and to get our barbecue out to different parts of the county as well as different parts of the world. And sometimes it's not just a product, it's ideas. And that goes into really why we started podcasting. We started a podcast called Behind the Smoke. 2 years ago, we published 100 episodes, and it was a way for us to give back to the barbecue community and the entrepreneur community that had taught us so many things. We interviewed other people, legends that we were able to meet either through social media or through events, whether they were in sports entertainment, whether they owned a restaurant group, whether they were you know, different leaders that just inspired us, and we were able to interview them and they shared their story. And we were able to win best podcast, best barbecue podcast for the National Barbecue Association last year, which was something that's incredible when you think of a barbecue restaurant in San Diego and a butcher shop in San Diego. You know, essentially San Diego is not known for barbecue, but because we focused on getting our message out there, becoming a media company and publishing a podcast and figuring out YouTube and figuring out Twitter and figuring these things out, people from all over the world were listening to our barbecue story in our little village in Spring Valley, California. And it's been really powerful.
And that's digital marketing. That's how businesses can use this platform to market their company and the service they already provide.
Yes.
Reach a global audience.
Correct. And you know, the biggest thing is, well, why am I going to invest the time and the effort, you know, what's my ROI, what's my return on investment for committing to do a podcast or start a YouTube channel? And that's the wrong mentality. The mentality is, if I don't, what's going to happen to my business? You know, Toys R Us, I know they're making a comeback, but they didn't do things to become an online toy company. And they relied on an old big box model where they would go and create this huge toy. Right now, I currently cannot take my son or my daughter to Toys R Us. I know that eventually they're coming up with a new plan, but a smaller footprint. But these things are beyond relevant. And every business, every industry is affected. And if you don't understand that people are on their phones and people are searching for the things that they love on these different apps, then if you're not discoverable, no one's going to find you. That's just the bottom line.
So social media, it is. Get on it to be found, really, and actually connect with the listeners, with the audience, and engage with them on a regular basis to actually keep them loyal.
Correct. Well, I mean, it's just like anything. If you walk into a Home Depot and you would like some help, it's nice when you get help, right? It's nice when somebody smiles and welcomes you into the store and says, you know, is there any way I can help you? And you say, I have, you know, this light bulb. Can you show me where these light bulbs are? That person actually takes the 15 seconds to walk you to the third aisle and show you which exact light bulb that is. Chances are you'll probably buy it and you'll feel happy about that. But what does happen is you walk in, you ask somebody, and then they tell you, you know, you have to interrupt them because they're walking too fast. And then you stop them and it feels like you're inconveniencing them. And then all of a sudden you say, where can I find this light bulb? And they point, they say, oh, it's, you know, six aisles down. You go to the light bulb aisle and you realize there's 3,000 different light bulbs, and it's going to take you, you know, an additional 10 minutes. You probably have to ask for somebody else to help you find the light bulb you want. And like, that's not hospitality. And there's a way to do that. Obviously for us, you can't be a restaurant and not have incredible hospitality. You can't be a restaurant and not have incredible food. Before, that was enough to get people to come to your business. Now you have to care enough about, how do I act digitally in a hospitable way so that people understand this is the company that when I go, my wife, if she goes to a restaurant, she doesn't look at the menu. She goes to Yelp and looks at the photos for the restaurant, whatever photos people have generated for the menu items. And she goes, I'm going to have that. If you don't care about those things as a business owner, eventually less people are going to come to your place of business. They're going to make decisions prior to coming to your business. And it's going to be very hard for you to sustain.
Yeah. And it's that's the physical portion of it. But there's also for content sharing. It's the same thing. If somebody reach out to you, they want some type of help, you got to be able to provide that that initial free content.
100%. And if they reach out digitally and they send a message and they ask a question, what if nobody responds? It's just as if you were walking into that Home Depot store and somebody wasn't there. I mean, you have to be able to give a response. And the people and the companies and the technology that are creating ways for businesses to respond to customer inquiries, not only respond, but respond in a way that humanizes the company, that's not corporate, that's personal. Those companies are going to win. And it's hard. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you that I wish I had the answer for all of it, because I'd be, you know, be very rich. But that's not my goal. My goal is to continue learning and know that just because, you know, we do an incredible job on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter now, that doesn't mean that that's going to change in 2 years. And we're going to have to, you know, all of a sudden Pinterest makes a comeback, and that's where people are looking for, you know, catering. Well, guess what? We need to understand and do a better job on Pinterest. We need to do a better job on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And that's just that's the reality of the world we live in.
Yeah, got to be agile, got to be adaptable, got to be able to move with the time. As you say, it's forever changing. You can't be afraid of change and to go with it.
100%.
Let's shift gears. We're both local. I am in San Diego, California, and live at Claremont. And I know the Chargers recently left San Diego. How has that change affected San Diego sports bars, businesses?
That's a great question. That's a loaded question. For us, we've always been a San Diego Chargers bar and a San Diego sports bar. So much so that anything that we do 100%. So we're kind of all in. We didn't want to be the sports bar that just because we said we're a Chargers bar and we have the Chargers flag and, you know, some Chargers jerseys in the restaurant. That is just kind of a foot in the door, a foot in the water. We go all in, and I've been a season ticket holder since, I believe, 2004. So not only was I a season ticket holder before we opened the restaurant, once we opened the restaurant, we started organizing tailgates with some of the regular customers so that every home game, we would invite anyone from the restaurant as well as anyone that we knew in San Diego to come to the tailgate. And that was able to grow to a point where when the Chargers were working on trying to find a stadium here in San Diego, trying to push a political initiative, a ballot measure called the C ballot measure to try to build a stadium in downtown San Diego in connection with the convention center. We didn't just sit by on the sidelines. We actually figured out, you know, I said, if I can get involved with the Save Our Bolts nonprofit organization, possibly our restaurant can help, you know, be part of a story that we saved our football team from leaving. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. But because we put ourselves out there, we spent time, we spent effort, we spent money on something that had most of the people, if you look from the outside, would say, why are you spending time, money, and effort on something that doesn't impact your business? For us, we were able to meet all the leaders and all the Charger fan groups. We were able to meet, you know, the owners of the Chargers, who actually I went to school with, on Spanos, who's one of the owners. And I was able to rekindle a high school friendship. That gave us an opportunity as a restaurant to do a catering, multiple caterings for the San Diego Chargers. And, you know, for somebody that has loved the Chargers as my number one sports team, you know, to say that we were able to serve slow smoked ribs and chicken and mac and cheese and wedding beans to a Hall of Fame tight end, Antonio Gates, and, you know, the entire team, that's an incredible thing for us. And that was something that it would have never happened had we not done what we did. By doing that, when the Chargers left, we had to make a stance. We had to say, are we still a Chargers bar, or are we just committed to San Diego sports? And because they're in LA and it's controversial, we'll just go ahead and say that we're no longer a Chargers bar. For us, it was an easy decision. We've always been a Chargers bar. So we continued to be that. And because of that, we had a lot of people online on Twitter, particularly, that were upset and told us to close our restaurant, to move up to Los Angeles, and kind of tried to get some other internet trolls to essentially write fake Yelp reviews to try to damage our business. And thankfully, because of all the time and effort we had spent with all the local media, with other leaders, other people that are active, other influencers, they all came to our defense. Whether they believed we should be a Chargers bar or not a Chargers bar, that's not the issue. It was, who are we as people? What do we do for the community? And it ended up getting covered by the New York Times front desk sports section the day that the Chargers played the playoff game against the Patriots, which I always joke that we got in the New York Times before we got in the San Diego Union Tribune, which is kind of funny if you think about it.
Well, that's what happened when you played the Patriots. I'm from Boston.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Unfortunately, being a Chargers fan is not easy.
Yeah. And I would think that because the Chargers are no longer here, we had some fans that would love to still reminisce and still have a place to call home and still go and watch the games at your sports bar, you know?
When they started winning at the end of the last season, it was much easier for fans to come back out of the closet and say, well, we're not getting an NFL team anytime soon. And this was a team I've grown up with, I've loved. I'm just going to go ahead and cheer for them. And
that's the feedback I would expect to happen, because it's no longer here. You still need to hold it dear because you grew up with it. It's been here for so long,
and
right?
It's not just the sport. I mean, it's always been bigger than the sport. It's the people that we tailgate with. I mean, we grow up with families in the parking lot, and, you know, we know their daughters and we watch them, you know, learn how to throw a football, and we know the wives and we know, you know, the cousins and the uncles and every single, you know, that just becomes, when the NFL schedule comes out, we know when we're going to see our tailgate family. And that's something that's exciting for a football fan, and always has been exciting for us.
Mm-hmm. I want to get into, as a sports bar, you're a bar owner, yet you struggle with alcoholism. How did you manage that?
Yeah, it was, you know, for me, it was actually after my second DUI. I've always been somebody that alcohol has always played a role in my life. You know, especially with tailgating and hosting parties and owning a sports bar. And I thought that I was a functioning alcoholic. I thought that was something that was, just because I was able to work really hard to have a business, to pay my bills and really not get into any legal trouble until my two DUIs. It was after the second DUI where I realized that I had been at a tailgate after my first DUI, and my uncle had been sober for, I think he had been sober for a couple of years at that point, but he was probably the most stubborn man ever that I thought would never, no one was going to ever tell him that he had an alcohol problem and that, you know, he should get help. And he was able to figure it out on his own, and he was able to go into AA. And he started living a life that, you know, frankly, it was beautiful. It was beautiful to watch his change. And he never forced the program on me. He never forced it on our family. But after my first DUI, I was at tailgate, and I was there with him and actually his sponsor and some other AA buddies, as well as all the other people that were drinking. So, you know, 300 people drinking, and then maybe five guys that are in AA that are drinking Perrier. But his sponsor said to me, you know, do you have a problem with alcohol? Because I told him I had gotten the DUI, and he said, I told him, no, I don't have a problem with alcohol. You know, I just got in trouble. I said, okay, well, if you get another DUI, then let's talk. And sure enough, it was 5 years later. And when I got arrested, all I could think about was what he had said to me. And I knew at that time, the first DUI was not married. Second DUI was married. And, you know, it just hit me that if I was going to be a leader, if I was going to be responsible for all the employees that I have in the community and try to do things, then I had to deal with my addiction, my disease, my allergy. And, you know, that was 2012, April 29th. So seven years of sobriety. It's been the best thing that I've ever done. It's very difficult in the restaurant business and bar business, because we work very hard. We work when everyone plays. We do the amount of hours that we do. We're burning the candle on both ends. And it's always easy to justify why we can have the late night drinks. And unfortunately, you know, it's a tough problem. I mean, we all know Anthony Bourdain and his struggles with addiction, and, you know, his recent suicide. Even when he's filming Parts Unknown, you know, I was in one of my meetings, and it was a day or 2 days after he had committed suicide. And, you know, all the press was talking about how he struggled with addiction, and, you know, that it was that, you know, he had an alcohol problem, but I didn't even realize he was still drinking, you know, when he was on his show. You know, so he really wasn't working a program. He wasn't in recovery. And, you know, that's just, it's just a really sad thing to lose people like that, to a disease. And, you know, every family, you know, just because it's, you know, I'm here in Spring Valley, and my family's from Bulgaria, there's alcoholism in Bulgaria. And, you know, hopefully wherever people are, there's somewhere that they can go. And AA is worldwide, which is something that's amazing. It's been something that's, it's changed my life.
Yeah. And I agree with you. It is a disease. I myself struggled with alcoholism. I would come home from a stressful work and have one glass of wine, and then a whole bottle later, I justify it. I said, I can function. I can get up and go to work and be all right. And it just grabs a hold of you. It changes changes your whole life. And what has had to happen for me was like, I can't continue to do the same things if I want to be at another level. And this year, earlier this year, April, Easter Sunday, I had my last drink. Wow. Easter Sunday. And I haven't had the desire to go back. I haven't had the desire to just go back to who I was. I'm afraid of her. I don't want her back in my life. That for me is, it means putting the bottle down, keeping the glass of wine away. And that changes my behavior as well. It changes where I go. It changes what I do.
Well, congratulations. And thank you for the courage to share that. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of things. It's easy to talk about, you know, success and being able to, you know, run a restaurant and do great things. It's the struggles. And that was one of the things, you know, my alcoholism, I had no problem sharing that on, you know, on our podcast Behind the Smoke for the last 2 years. And the more that we shared our personal struggles as men, you know, my co-host and I, the more that people responded, because, you know, life is hard and we all have struggles, and people need to know that there's, you know, there is another way, that there is hope, and that they can do it.
And there's a way out. And I want to congratulate you as well for overcoming alcoholism. I know my struggle was because my dad wasn't in my life all these years, and that I struggled in with abuse and not finding my purpose, and all that contributed to me wanting to drink and numbing the pain down, the deep sorrow that I felt growing up and I walked through life with on a daily basis. Do you see that alcoholism had something to do with not having your birth father around?
I don't believe so, but it's possible. You know, it's definitely possible. For me, I'm not cured of alcoholism. That's why I continue to go to my AA meetings. We have two meetings a week at our restaurant, and we had them even before I was an alcoholic. And it actually, that's where I became sober. And, you know, I read the book and I, you know, call my sponsor and I do the things that I have to do, to continue, because, you know, I haven't drank in 7 years. That's why you go to AA meetings, is you see how people, they think that they get cured. And, you know, it's so easy to start drinking again. And that's when bad things happen. So, you know, it's really the support network, and it's being able to share, you know, whatever life struggles are on a weekly basis. And for me, I don't know. That's a good question. And, you know, probably something I might think more about. But I've lived such a blessed life, and I've only recently shared, you know, I wrote an article on Medium about my search for my birth father and why I did that. And I don't want to give him really the credit that, you know, because that's really not the story. The story is my grandfather. My grandfather was my father. He was the one that stepped in and played a role to give me the incredible life that I have. And, you know, he was born in a village, a small, tiny village in the other side of the world, in Bulgaria. And he was supposed to be a farm boy, but because he loved to read and he had this curiosity and this drive and this desire, he was able to move, you know, become a medical doctor during World War II in Germany, when the Nazis were trying to recruit international students. And he was able to, unfortunately, not have to fight in the war, become a medical doctor, and give me a life of privilege. And now, you know, I'm able to share whatever wisdom he's parted to me onto my son and my daughter. And, you know, that's really, really the things that I try to focus on.
Yeah. The important things. It's about where you're going and the growth. Thank you for sharing. And, I know we are running out of time, but I would love to know about your morning routine. I know you have, two young ones at home, and.
Yes. Well, morning routine is something, I got it from my grandfather. And, you know, the more that I started reading and started listening to podcasts, the more that I realized that the people that I admired the most, whether they were athletes, whether they were business leaders, whether they were authors, writers, presenters, business owners, they consistently had time in the early morning where their thought was uninterrupted. So they protected that time and they used it to make themselves better and to think bigger. And, you know, for me, I always try, you know, to be honest with you, with my two little ones, my morning routine's been a little bit different, especially in the last 2 years. But I'm always at my best when I wake up and I'm able to sit down with my planner, at least for 15, 20 minutes, plan, go through what, you know, weekly, monthly goals are, do a little bit of journaling, and then read something that inspires me or something. for the next hour. And then once I always want to try to listen to a podcast or part of a podcast on my way to work, which is, that's the greatest thing, is my car, my truck has become a university for me, and I can listen to the things that inspire me, that make me want to be better.
Yep. My cell phone is my university as well. I have everything I need on their podcast, audio book, YouTube. I barely listen to music unless yep. it's gospel music and I'm on my way to church. It really is some stimulating content, consuming something of substance like you do in the morning, because it sets the tone. It helps you out, sets a tone for the rest of the day, because you are learning and you're already a curious individual. And so it comes easy for you, but it is so important for others to know the beauty of planning and thinking, allowing yourself just the space to think and process your thoughts and look at your goal. Because if you don't have a goal, how can you hit a target you don't have?
That's correct.
You need to have those goals in place. And I love that you think about your weekly, monthly, and yearly goals, because it will direct your direction every day on what you need to do, what you need to work on at the moment, and not waste time on irrelevant items.
Yeah, I think it's just part of it's too, is it's being on offense. You know, especially as if you're a leader, if you're, you know, in charge of people, if you're responsible for people, you know, as a business owner, restaurant owner, everything, once I get to the restaurant, you know, especially once the restaurant's open, it's people want things from me. They want answers from me, which is part of the job. That's what we signed up for. But being on offense, I'm allowed to proactively choose what information and the things that I want. And those things, I try to always tend to be bigger picture things, because then it allows me to grow and to be uncomfortable, to learn something that I didn't know before.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us, how can we connect with you?
Best is Twitter, and it's Shawn, S-H-A-W-N-P, middle initial, and then last name Walchef, W-A-L-C-H-E-F.
Shawn, thank you for sharing today. To recap, your planning, your journaling, your podcast, listening to podcasts and audiobook, and these are great ways to start your day. All right, morning enthusiasts. If you can adapt these few impactful habits, I will for sure see you at the top of your best morning routine ever. Shawn, have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.